Okay, we're starting at the bottom of Kafalef Amud Bet. We're still in the middle of all these issues about Kiyum Shtarot, okay, which we're going to move off of soon. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Okay, Rabbi Abba says the name of Rav Huna and the name of Rav. Shloshash yashvu l'kayem et hashtar v'kara ir er al achad mehem. So three people sit down to be mekayem the shtar, and one of the three people are suspect that they're not appropriate, okay? So one of the dayanim, basically, there's a suspicion about this dayan, whether he's okay or not. Ad shelo chatmu mi'idim alav. We're going to get to this in Sanhedrin, exactly who's a pasul edud and who's a pasul dayan and what criteria there are. But there was an issue with this dayan, and the other two dayanim can testify about the third that he's okay. Okay, because karar er means someone had a suspicion. We're going to see exactly what kind of a suspicion in a minute. But someone had a suspicion. And if they haven't yet signed the document, the other two dayanim, then they can testify that he's okay. But mishe chatmu, once they sign, ein mi'idin alav. Okay, why is that? Because once they sign, they're signed on this document. Now, if he's signed on the document also, and there's suspicion about him, well, that means there's suspicion about them also. Because you can't, if you sign with someone, there's a whole sugya in Sanhedrin about this, if you sign with someone on you should check into who your co-dayanim are. You shouldn't ever be in the company of someone who's got a psul, because it reflects poorly on you. So once it has to do with them, meaning once they've already signed, they're nogea be'edut. It's in their best interest to say this guy's okay, because otherwise it's going to look bad for them that they signed with him. So therefore, once they already signed, they can't. Now the Gemara says, this was a statement of Rav that was passed down the name of Rav, and the Gemara comments on it, irir demai. So what kind of irur are we talking about? Irir de gazlanuta. Okay, one of the main psula edim is a gazlan. Why? Because what's a gazlan? Suspicious that he's after money. So what's the problem with a psul le'edut, he's going to take money to lie, or a dayan is going to take money to judge in someone's favor. So if we're talking about gazlanuta, so then what do you have? What does it mean in ir-or? Ir-or means two people came and said he's a robber, and now you have these two dayanim who say he's not a robber. So trey u'trey ninhu, and what do we say, right? Whenever it's trey u'trey, we just throw them out, right? It's hafkasha. We just say we don't know what the case is, and therefore it can't be that. Because then it wouldn't matter whether chatmu, lo chatmu, it's just we wouldn't accept anything, no matter what. If it's an issue that we're worried that he came from a family of avadim, let's say. Okay, now if you're from, there's a whole list of people who can't become a judge. If you come from the family of an eved, you can't become a judge. Now if that's what they're testifying about, this is interesting, that's not called testimony. Why? Because it's Gilo Ba'alma, it's Gilo Milta. We're just revealing facts. Now, there's a difference between saying, is someone a thief or not? Did he rob? Didn't he rob? As opposed to, well, we can check the records. And ultimately, we're not going to rely necessarily on these Dayanim saying it. It can be revealed even without the Dayanim. We can just look back at the records. So therefore, their testimony is also not so relevant. Now, it's not even considered testimony. They would be allowed to testify in this case because it's something that will ultimately be revealed, and therefore they're not really considered nogea be'edut. So therefore they say la'olam, so it can't be either of them. So what is it then? La'olam e'am alacha ira de gazlanuta. It is that they say he was a robber. V'ka'amre hana yed'ina be'da'avad shuva. Now here's a really interesting sugya which we're going to get to in Sanhedrin about at what point do you assume that someone who's a psula edut actually did tshuva, and we can now accept his testimony again. And there's actually a whole really interesting sugi about it. Here they don't relate to it at all. Here they just say very simply, if he did tshuva, then fine. Okay, so Rashi says, what does it mean he did tshuva? Beheshiva tagzela, he returned what he stole. Okay, maybe that's the issue.
That doesn't sound good enough to me.
So I'll tell you, the whole sugi in Sanhedrin is very interesting. It actually, It relates to all sorts of things. Like, for example, I'll just give you an example. If you're a gambler, it's a problem, right? So, or I'll give you a better one. You're milaveh b'ribit, okay? Let's say you charge interest to Jews, because you're allowed to charge interest to non-Jews, you're not allowed to charge interest to Jews. Let's say you charge interest to Jews, and that's why you're psul edut, because again, you're looking for the money. So you have to stop doing that, and not even charge interest to non-Jews, which is allowed. In other words, you have to not do something that's within your field, right? But within the same thing, but mutar, to show that you've gone ad kedei kach. It's a very interesting sugya because you never really know, does someone do tshuva or not, right? When it comes to man and God, so it's between man and God. This is an issue where there's a practical ramification, which is, can we accept him in court to be a witness or a judge or whatever it might be? So anyway, they're not relating to all those details, but they're basically saying, we know he did tshuva, and therefore it's not a dud hakasha. It's, right, one is building on the other. Yes, he was a gazlan. It's almost like our things, right? Yes, he's a gazlan, but now he's no longer a gazlan. Okay. I'm a Rabbi Zera. Ha milta me Rabbi Abba Shmieli. I learned this from Rabbi Abba. V'ilav Rabbi Abba de Minako shachachti. Okay, so he's saying, the thing I'm going to tell you right now, I learned from Rabbi Abba. And if it weren't for Rabbi Abba, they reminded me of this shachachta. I forgot it. In other words, he reminded me of it. Gimel sheyashvu l'kayem et hashtar, umet echad mehem. Let's say three people come, they sit, they're going to be mekayem the shtar, but one dies. Okay, before the shtar gets signed.
You mean like?
Meaning they sat in the court, the judges said, this is good, but then one of them died. Mm-hmm. So now there's only two people left to sign the document. So the question is going to be, do you need to bring a new third, and do the whole thing all over again? Or because you at least have two people who can sign the shtar, that's enough. So that's what they're going to say, basically. Tzrichim lemichtav, they have to write, b'motav talta havina, and it has to be a true document. So what do they have to write? We sat with three, b'chad litohu, and one is no longer with us. Okay? And therefore, two are signed at the bottom, and that would be okay. Since two is generally okay for edut, so they're going to allow it, since it was mekuyam with three, the signatures are just kind of testifying that that happened. Amar of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, v'i katav be shtara dina nafik l'kadmana bedina, tu lo tzarich. If you just write, this shtar had come out from the Beit Din, meaning the Beit Din had authorized it, that's enough. Two lots of it. You don't need to write that we sat with three and one is no longer here. Okay, it's enough if you just say this was authorized by a Beit Din and you have two signatures at the bottom. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question on this. V'dilma Beit Din chatzufu ukid Shmuel. Damar Shmuel. Shmuel has this famous shita, which is shnayim shedanu dinehem din. What does that mean? He says, yes, you need three, but if you only had two judges in a case, it would work, but they're called a Beit Din Chatzuf. In other words, it's not a good thing, but if it were to happen, b'diavad, it would be okay. So because he says that, they're saying maybe we should be concerned if we just wrote the words, this came out of a Beit Din, maybe we should be concerned that the Beit Din was only two in that case. Right? You understand? In the first case, they said, you have to write, we were three, and now we're only two because one died or one left or whatever it might be. Specifying that we were three to begin with. If you just write, it was done in a Beit Din, so the assumption at first was that obviously that means there were three, but now they're saying, no, it could be there were only two, and it's a Beit Din chatzuf, like Shmuel says. And generally, right, we don't want to know that this was done in a bidyevet way, so they're saying, why aren't we concerned that people might have done it? It might have been done in a Beit Din Chatzuf, because the Lashon Beit Din could mean two. We're going to see all sorts of sugyas where, even though Beit Din is really three, there's certain things that they allow two for. Okay, this is one of them, that we're going to allow two signatures. You know, Shmuel's another that says, basically, if you were to do it, it works, even though, ideally, you need three. So now they say, Dichtib Beit Dina Derabana Ashi. If it says in it, for example, the court of Rabban Ashi, we all know that that was run by Rabban Ashi, and that was an impressive court, and they weren't going to hold by a Beit Din Chatzuf. And they say, B'dilma Rabbanan de Bei Rav Ashi, k'dishmo sfira lehu. How do you know? Maybe Rav Ashi himself wouldn't have, but maybe the Dayanim in his court, maybe also some of them hold by Shmuel that it's okay. So they say, so sfira lehu. It's a case where it says, and Rav Ashi told us, you know, that it almost has Rav Ashi's stamp of approval on it somehow. And then we know that Rav Ashi would never hold for a Beit Din Chatzuf. So they basically narrowed this case, right? To say that you could just write Beit Din, put their stamp of approval with two signatures, that would only work if we have like a rabbi's haskava on it or something. Like if it became clear it came from some big court with some big rabbi's name, and that it was clear he personally was involved. So already we've kind of neutralized this halacha because it's hard to imagine in most cases they're going to do that. Okay, but I guess if you were in a situation, I guess what it's saying is you have two options. Either you can write, we were three and now we're only two because one is no longer here and that's why we're signed two. Or you say it was done with the stamp of approval of some rabbi and then it would be okay. Question is, who has to sign that? And how do you know really it was done with that rabbi and nobody's forging that? That's a good question. Right? It's like we said the other day, ein ledavar sof, right? If you're worried about forgery, you know, really there's lots of possibilities. Okay, new Mishnah. Now we're going to get into a whole slew of Mishnayot, and part of them we're going to deal with this woman who gets taken captive. We're going to see a lot about her. Right? There was always this concern if a woman gets taken captive that she was raped. Okay, that's the big main concern with this. However, we don't know really. Right? We don't know what happened there. So first we're going to start not with this case. Ha'isha sha'amra eshet ishayiti ugushani ne'emenet sha'apesa sha'ap. Hapesha asar hu apeshitir. Now we're going to have a whole slew of cases of apesha asar, other ramifications of it. So this is one of the famous ones. A woman says, I was married, but I got divorced. So since we didn't know she was an eshadish before that, she's bechezkat bitula, or an unmarried woman. So therefore, when she says, I was married and I'm grusha, now we can assume that she's not married. Vim yesh edim shaita eshadish, right? You can see where this is going. Vihi omerik grusha ani. If there were eidim that says she was married and she claims she's divorced, ena ne'emet, right? Then she's not believed because the eidim have her bechezkat eshadish, and she obviously went. This is a case where she doesn't have a get to show for it. She lost her get, right? Something happened to it. Amra nishpeti. She says I was taken captive. Utahorani, but nothing happened to me. I wasn't raped. Again, she'd be ne'emenet, because again, what do we have here? It's apesha asar hu apesha yitir. She didn't, no one else knew that she was taken captive. She comes with that information on her own. Vim yesh edim shenishbet v'hi omer tohorani, eina ne'emenet. Okay, but if she says there were edim, I'm sorry, if there were edim that showed that she was taken captive, and we're not just relying on her testimony, and she says, but I wasn't raped, we don't believe her. Because again, she's b'chezkat, the assumption is, any woman taken captive, we have to assume that she was raped. But now we're going to see that we don't assume 100% she was raped. Because if she already went ahead and got married, okay, right, so what would be the case? I guess this is to a... Right, the Gemara is going to talk about what this means. Right. There's a whole question in the Gemara. It's not in today's sugya. There's a whole question in the Gemara about what is this referred to? Is this the divorcee case? Is this the, you know, to which case? So we'll leave it aside for right now. But the point is, b'dievet, if she already got married, and then the eidim came, in other words, she did hapesha saru hapeshi itir, okay? And therefore, she goes and gets married based on that. And then witnesses come, then lo tete, she doesn't have to get divorced, okay?
That shows how powerful this concept is, that they allow her to marry a kohen. That's really interesting.
If she
was captured, that shows just how powerful that is.
Right. Well, a regular rape case, right? So the question is, what are we talking about here? Is this a woman who, if she just gets raped before she, right? Oh, you're right. She still can't marry Cohen. That was why. Okay. Right. She still can't marry Cohen because she was raped by a non-Jew. That's why. And as if she was raped by a Jew, I think she can marry. No, she can't. If she's raped at all. I thought, oh, you're right. If she's married to the Cohen, she can't go back to him. But right, if she was raped at all, even by a Jew?
I don't think she can marry a Cohen. I think she can marry
a Jew. I think if she was raped by a Jew, I forgot now. I think if she's raped by a Jew, it might be okay. But if she's raped, the assumption here is she was raped by a non-Jew. As anyone who had sex with a non-Jew is problematic to marry a Cohen. And if you were married and you got raped and you're married to a Cohen, you can't go back to him. But I think if she was raped, think that she can marry. I forget now. Okay, I'll have to look it up. Remind me after class to write it down here. Rape, Cohen, four. Fine. Okay.
Sure.
Tom. Otherwise, I never remember after. Okay. Amar of Asi. Minayin lahapesh asar hu apeshi hitir min haTorah. Now we say, where do we learn this from the Torah? What's the source for this? Shenemar et biti natati laish hazeh. This is by Motzi Shemra. The father comes and says, I gave my daughter to this man. So now they say, Li'isha, Leisha, one second. How do we remember? Epitina tati leisha de. Sorry. Leisha. That's why I was reading the pasuk. Epitina tati leisha de leisha. Period. Okay. I gave my daughter to this man to be his wife. So now, what do we darshan from here? Leish asara. Okay. Meaning, when I gave her to this man, I forbade her, right? When he says la'ish, it means, therefore she became forbidden to everybody. But hazeh hitira. Okay, so what do you see? He forbade her, and then he matired her, right? Because by giving her to one man, remember we talked about this, the stages of erusin and nisuin. Erusin forbids her to everybody, and nisuin matires her. So he was the one who was osir, and he was the one who was matir. It's like the person who osirs has the capability to be matir. And that's what they dash up from the word hazeh. So then the Gemara says, wait a minute. Lama likra, svarahi, hu asara, v'hu sharela. In other words, that's obvious. You don't need a pasuk for this. So therefore, now they're going to say, this pasuk comes to teach us something else. Ela ki itzrich kra l'chidrav huna amarav. We needed it to teach us a different halach. Okay, so now we're just darshaning this pasuk where we've left hapesh asar hapesh itir. To amrav hun amarav, minayin la'av shene eman le'esurit bitomin atoha. How do we know that a father is allowed to basically marry off his daughter, right, and thus forbid her to all other men? Okay, this is when she's a ktana, right, because he can marry off when she's a ktana. Shene emar, epitina tati li'ish ali'ish. Okay, I gave my daughter to this man. Meaning that he has the power to forbid her to all other men. Right? Because remember, a young girl is mutter to everybody. So how do we know the father can actually do the one who does the kiddushin? Right? We took this as a basic, obvious thing, because we've always learned it. The father can marry off the daughter. But now they're saying, here's the source for it. Because he says that, bitina tati la'ish. So now they say, hazeh lamali. So why did you have to say la'ish hazeh, this particular one? Mebaile l'chiditane Rabbi Yonah. We need it for this bride to the Rabbi Yonah said. Titani Rabbi Yonah et bitina tati laish hazeh, hazeh velo liyabam. Okay, what does that mean? It means that if he married her off, okay, if he married her to a person, and then, okay, what we have to remember, the context of this case is Motzi Shemra. So now, what happens with Motzi Shemra? That means she was supposed to be a betula and she wasn't, right? He claims that she wasn't, but really she was, and he was just playing around, right? He just wanted to make a scene, or he was trying to make her look bad. He has to pay her money to, you know, or pay the father money to basically for the embarrassment he caused. So now that halacha is only true if epitina tati la'ish hazeh, if it's the exact person he married her off to. But let's say the father married her off to a guy. The guy died before they got married. And what do we learn from erusin? You do yibum. And she now falls to Yibum, to the brother. And the brother marries her, B'shem Yibum, and then claims that she's not a betula and is Motzi Shemra, and lied about it. So in that case, the Yabam doesn't have to pay the money. In other words, the only case of Motzi Shemra, according to Rabbi Yonah, is La'ish Hazeh. This is when the guy who you married her off to then claims she wasn't a betula. But if the Yabam did it, he wouldn't be obligated to pay the money. The logic behind this, I don't really know. I didn't look into it enough. But it's a good question what exactly the logic is. Okay. Well, maybe we'll see it when we're going to see the sugya later also. Tana Rabbanan. Hayisha shamra eshet ishani. V'chazra v'amra pnuyani. Ne'emenet. Okay, so now what do we have, right? She says, I'm an eshet ish. And then she says, but I'm single. Okay, so now she seems to say contradictory testimony, right? First she says, I'm married. Then she says, I'm single. So what do they say? Ne'emenet. They say she's believed. So, right? Because why? Apesha sara apeshitir, right? She said, I'm an eshish, but then she said, I'm a pnuya. So now they say, what do you mean? V'hashav yanafsha chaticha di'isura. But didn't she turn herself, when she said, I'm an eshish, we learned this concept, right? Shav yanafsha chaticha di'isura. People have the power with their words to turn themselves into something forbidden. So she basically said, when she said, I'm an Eshadish, she now became an Eshadish. So when she says, I'm a Pnuya, without bringing any proof, how can we believe that? Okay, so why is she believed? So So Amar Rava Bar Rav Huna, this is a really interesting sugya we're going to get into now. Kigon shenatna amtala lidvareha. It's in a case where she explained herself. She had a good reason for lying. Okay? We're going to get into a few reasons soon. Okay, what does that mean? It means when I said I was an Eshadish, I wasn't really an Eshadish. I said it because blah, blah, blah. Okay, we're going to see why soon. Tanya nami ha'achi, amra Eshadishani, v'chazra v'amra pnuyani, en an emenet. Ah, here we have, right? Here we have the exact, what we thought would be the case. If she says I'm Eshadish, and then she says I'm pnuyah, she's not believed. V'im natla amtala lidvareha ne'emenet. But if she gives an excuse, then she's believed. Okay, so basically we have two different cases. If a woman says, I'm an Eshadish, and then later she comes and says, I'm not married. What do you mean? You just said you were married. So once you said you were married, we turn you into an Eshadish, and you're b'chazkan Eshadish now. You can't just come and say, I'm pnuyah. But if she explained that I said I was an Eshadish because of something, then we're going to see a maaseh right now, and we'll see why she might have done that. Then she's believed. Umaseh nami b'ishachat. So what we did was, just structurally, we brought a braita that said she's believed. We explained that that braita must be only in a particular case, when she gives an excuse. And then we brought another braita to support that reading, because the other braita said it explicitly. If it's this case, she's believed. If it's that case, she's not believed. So we had a braita that wasn't so clear to us, because it didn't make sense. We explained it's only in a particular case, and we brought a braita to support that claim. It's a very typical structure.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sure.
Why would they bring the first braita that's not so clear?
Right. So
we may not have time to answer.
It's a good question. There's no really good answer to that. It's very likely that what we're seeing is a discussion evolving. The Gemara is often given in discussion form. Somebody brought the braita to the Beit Midrash. There was a discussion about what do you mean? And then someone else said, oh, well, I know another braita. You have to remember the braitot, okay, as opposed to the Gemara, the braitot were memorized. And people had braitot in their head. They weren't really written down for the most part. So it wasn't like you could open a book and look it up and try to find it. So the way the conversation went was very often like that, where somebody brought a braita, somebody else. Now, often you see rabbis talking. Here there's no discussion, but it's very likely that when they put together the Gemara, they arranged it according to the way it evolved. And very often you see that, where they could have a whole daf of discussion about something, and all of a sudden, you'll finally have the source that says exactly what they were looking for the whole time. But it only comes at the end. You could say that it's also just to show there's different opinions, right, or there's different, right, sources. Because again, you have to remember, the fact that this source existed and they explain it in a particular way also doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only way to read,
right,
it. It could be that there were two different approaches.
Right.
And that one didn't mention the Amtala because it thought that she was always believed in that case. So that's also, you know, at least for our purposes, it's interesting to see that braita existed and to think about it in a sense. Now, maybe really there are two different opinions here, but the Gemara likes to, if they can, fit it all together. So here they have a way to fit it all together by saying it's just missing a few words, the braita, and the braita just didn't explain itself well enough, what it was referring to. Okay, so now we're going to have a story. Umaseh nami b'isha chat gedola, shaita gedola binoy. Okay, she was, what does it mean she's a gedola? It didn't mean she was big and fat and heavy, right? She was, or tall, or I don't know. She was beautiful, okay? She was a beautiful woman that everybody was interested in. Kaftsua leha b'nei adam l'katsha. Everybody wanted to marry her. You can maybe see where this is going. V'amra lehem mikudeshet ani. I'm married, okay? She was just trying to avoid all these men harassing her. Liyamim amda v'kitshat atzma. Here's a great line, by the way. All these things about, right, that it's all the man is mekadesh the woman. Mm-hmm. Here it says this interesting lashon, she's kidshat atzma, which means basically, right, she married someone, but maybe she initiated the whole, right? She kind of allowed it to happen. So she let herself get married to this man, or, right, it's interesting, it doesn't even say it in the passive, right? It sounds like she was active about it. Kidshat atzma, v'amru lo chachamim, umara yi lasokken, and it's, how could you do this? I thought you were married. Amra lahem b'tchila shabaw alay anashim she'enam muhuganim, right? They weren't appropriate for me. Amarti mekudeshet ani. Achshav shabaw alay anashim muhuganim, amadti mekudeshti et atzmi. Now I found someone who was appropriate, so I married him. V'zo halacha, okay, zo halacha, this halacha, he'elam rav acha sar habira lefnei chachamim b'usha. Okay, he brought it in front of the rabbis in Usha. V'amru, and they said, im natna amtala lidvareha ne'emenet. Okay, if she explains it that way, then she's believed. Okay, now we're going to see a very interesting practical ramification of this when it comes to Hilchot Nida. Okay, and this comes up in the sources, in the halachic sources of Ben Nida. Ba minei Shmuel mirav. Shmuel asked Rav this. Amrat me'a ani v'chazram v'amrat tahora ani mahu. What if a woman says I'm in Nida to her husband? And then the next day she says, oh, I'm not in Nida. Okay? And obviously not enough days passed for her to have gotten out of Nida. Okay? Mahu. Amar le, af bizo, im natsna'am talalidvareha ne'emenet. Okay? Now, there's an interesting discussion about this. It comes up in the Yerushalmi. Okay, the Yerushalmi talks about, oh wait, I think we're going to get to it in a minute. 1 second, we'll read a little more, okay? And then we'll discuss it. Tana, the Brita said, Tana minye arba'im zimnin, vafilu hachi lo avid Shmuel uvda benafshin. So what happened? Shmuel asked Rav this question. What if a woman says, I'm in Nida, and then the next day she says, I'm not in Nida? Do we believe her or not? Rav says, if she has a good excuse, then we believe her. So Shmuel, and we've seen this before actually, if you remember, he repeated it to himself 40 times to kind of ingrain it in his head, what Rav said, because I guess he had some trouble grasping it or believing it. And even so, he wouldn't do it himself. So now, obviously, everybody wants to know what was the case. You know, what happened with him and his wife? It obviously happened with him and his wife. So in the Yerushalmi, it tells the story that she explained the next day that it was just that she didn't want to have sex with him. And she said, I'm in Nida, to avoid having sex with him because she was tired. Okay? So, you know, this is always used as like an example of, you know, be careful what you say because you could get yourself into trouble, right? The Shita Mekubetzet said there's a different version of the story, which is that they say it was customary for the wife to give a kos shel bracha, okay? After Berkat HaMazon, they used to bench on a cup of wine, which, you know, often people do nowadays, not always. It's a minhag to drink a cup of wine, and he would always give her the wine to drink, but not when she was in Nida. Okay, if she didn't drink from the cup, that would be an indication that she was in Nida. So it happened that he passed it to her, and she didn't drink, and he assumed that meant she was in Nida. But she explained later that his sister was there, and she didn't want to embarrass the sister-in-law because the sister wasn't drinking the wine because she was in Nida, and she didn't want to embarrass her by her drinking the wine. So one is...
drinking wine when you're Nida.
Maybe because he passed. I think it was a sign. I think it was more of a siman or something. Right? No, I don't know if it was the passing issue or just that she wouldn't drink from the kosher bracha. That was a siman that she was in Nida. Like they used that as a sign of her indicating she was in Nida. Something along those lines. I don't know. You have to look up the source itself in the Shita Mekubetzet there to see exactly how what went on there. But anyway. Two different versions about what the case was, but in any case, you can now start to understand what type of excuses, right? Because first you say, why would a woman say I'm married if I'm not married? Or why would she say I'm in Nida if I'm not? But there's reasons why people might say I'm in Nida, right? Either they don't want to have sex with their husband, right? So, you know, better off saying, being honest and saying, I don't want to have sex with you, rather than saying, I have my period. Okay, so, Tana Rabbanan. So what's interesting, right, I didn't check, maybe it says here, they often... I didn't check what the halacha lamaase is because I remember this coming up. The woman said she's married. No, he doesn't quote it lahalacha here. I have to look it up, what the halacha would be in the Nida. I remember it comes up. I don't remember what they say about it. If they pass it like Rav or like Shmuel, you know, and how it comes out. So Rav really says it's fine. Af bezo, right? There is... Usually, there's what's called the Amish Patner Mitzvah on the side. Okay, I'll give you like a minute of what this is. If you see at the top left of your Gemara, it says Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah.
Yeah.
So these are two different things. The Ein Mishpat, or let's start with the Ner Mitzvah. The Ner Mitzvah, you see there's two letters there. So for example, on Kafbet Amud Aleph, it starts at Nun Dalet, and then there's a little Aleph next to it. You see that? It says Nun Dalet, and then there's a teeny Aleph. Okay, everybody up at the left-hand side of Kafbet Amud Aleph. So the Ner Mitzvah counts mitzvot from the beginning of the parak. It just lists how many mitzvot there are. Those are the big letters. Those aren't so relevant. The Ein Mishpat tells you where you can find this issue in the Sifrei Halacha. It gives you, it says Mem Yud Yud. You see that? That's Maimon. That's the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah.
Oh, okay.
It gives you usually the Smag, which is the Sefer Mitzvot Gedolot, which is much less used now than it was, obviously, when this guy put it together. I think it was done in like the 1700s, if I remember correctly. And then he gives you, right, it's amazing to think this guy did this without computers or any technology. It's really amazing. His name was Rabbi Yoshua Boaz. I'm not saying his name wrong, but that's what I recall. Tor Shulchan Aruch, then he tells you where you can find it in the Torah and where you can find it in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch was based on the organization of the Torah, so it's always going to be in the same place. Because the Shulchan Aruch, when he wrote his book, based it, instead of starting from scratch, he said, oh, the Torah already has a good book, I'm going to start with his organization, and I'm going to build on that. So it tells you where you can find it. So generally, again, it could be there's a machloka between the Rambam, the Smag, and the Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch, and not everyone paskins the same thing. But generally, wherever they put that little, if you look now at the very last line on Kaf Bet, there's a little nun. What letter is it? A nun? Where is nun there? Oh, there. Yeah, yeah. There's a little nun at the bottom, right by the words Af Bezo Im Natna, which means usually they put the nun by the opinion that we hold life. So it means that if she has a good reason for saying I'm a nida. By the way, I can tell you where this is really relevant. This is relevant if a woman. This is actually, okay, now I remember the relevance. A woman is spotting, and she thinks she's in Nida. And she tells her husband, I'm in Nida. And then she asks a Rav, a Shaila about it, or a woman, a Shaila about it, or, you know, she finds out that actually she's not in Nida. Okay? So now, technically speaking, she said, right, in other words, the base halacha is, she said Tmeani, now she says Tohani. So how could, you know, so basically, many times people learn in Holocaust, and you look in these books, and it says, if you say, I'm Tmeani, you're Tmea. If you say, I'm Anita, like, never say you're Anita, because you can mess yourself up. Okay? Because once you do, but this halacha teaches you, no, she had a reason, meaning she thought she was Anita, and really she wasn't, because the spotting actually wasn't a halachically problematic spotting, and she finds that out later, then just because she said I'm Anita doesn't make her Anita. Okay, and that's where we have a very important, and we do Paschalus right now, I remember. Okay.
So this nun
so goes right on the words that say, Af bezo im natzna amtala lidvareha, she is believed. In other words, right? If she brings an excuse, then we believe her. Okay?
Why is it a nun?
Because nun is the, because if you look at the letters, there's actually a weird break there. That's why I got confused. But if you look down, there's Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. You see all the little letters on the Ein Mishpat? Again, ignore the big letters.
Yeah.
Look at the little ones. All the way, the last one where it says Samach Dalet, that's nun. There just happen to be 50 halachot on this page. Okay, there were a lot. Okay, a lot of lines that had halachot about them. Not 50, sorry. Nun is 50, but you're right. It's 10, right? Yud is 10. Lamed, Kaf would be 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 halachot. Sorry, I was doing gematria, but no, it's 14 halachot on this page. Okay? Now, Tana Rabbanan. Now we're going to have another case. Shnayim omrim met, ushnayim omrim lo met. Okay, we learned this in Yevamah, by the way, if you remember. Two people say the guy's dead, and two people say he's not dead, the husband, right? And the woman wants to get remarried. Shnayim omrim nitgarsha, ushnayim omrim lo nitgarsha, okay? Now, you might think these are going to be the same cases. Two come and say that, and two come and say that, but we're going to see there's a difference. Harezo lo tinase, okay, so right now we're going to say they're the same. In both these cases, she can't get remarried because, remember, she's bechezkat eshet ish, and we have two witnesses that say one, two witnesses that say the other. It's as if there's no witnesses, and we have no proof. V'im niseit lo tetzei. But if she got remarried based on the testimony, now we're going to see, what does it mean? But right now, the Tanakhama seems to say, if she's already married, since there was some evidence to support the fact that she was divorced or he died, she doesn't have to get divorced from her husband. Which is very tricky, because if really she's b'chazkat eshedish, how could we possibly say we can allow her to stay married? It's chiyuv karin and everything. So now Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi comes along and says, Menachem Bar Yossi, Omer Tetze, she has to get divorced from her husband. Okay? And you can't let her get married. She's suffering Eshadish, right? And if she's an Eshadish and marrying someone else, that's a problem. Amar Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi, Ematayani Omer Tetze, in which case do I believe that she has to get divorced? I'm sorry, she has to get divorced from her second husband. Bizman Shabau Edim Vacharkach Niset. It's in the case where the witnesses had already come, the ones who said he's not dead, or you're not divorced, before she remarried, okay? Aval niseit, but let's say she got married based on the testimony that the guy's dead, or that she got divorced, and then she gets remarried, and then the edim come, v'achar kach ba'u edim lo tetze, okay? So now the Gemara is going to ask a question on this. Michti treu treininu, haba'aleha ba'asham talu ikai. Still, how could you say this? Even if that's the case, right? At this point now, she already got remarried. Then new witnesses come and bring new testimony. The guy's not dead. We saw him walking around the streets of who knows where. Okay? So now we're going to say what? Just because we had two eidim that said he's dead and he is dead and now these... We're going to let you... We have a suffix right now. Is he really married? And anyone who sleeps with a woman who's a suffix, eshedi, she's chayv and asham talu. We learned about this asham talu. Remember, that's a case where you don't know if you did an avera or not, that's chayv karet. You bring an asham taloi, which means it's like a hanging asham, right? We don't know the case. If you eventually find out that really, 100%, you did something wrong, let's say we find the guy, he's really alive, then the asham taloi doesn't work. You actually have to bring an asham vadai. Okay? But in the meantime, kol od you don't know, the asham taloi helps take care of it. But obviously, you can't stay married to him. So, amar sheshet, kigon shenisait le'achad me'edeha. So they say it's in the case where she married one of the witnesses. Why is that different? So here it's interesting. You might think, right, he's interested, but no. It's Dr. the opposite. He knows the guy's dead. It's buried to him. It's, remember we had that whole term about buried b'shema. The court doesn't know for sure, but he knows for sure that he saw this guy die. He's so sure of it. He is allowed to stay married because there's no suffix in his mind. There's no asham taloi, okay? He knows for sure. So then they say, well, that's fine for him, but he gufa ba'asham taloi kaima. But she herself doesn't know for sure. So how can, right? A relationship has two people. It's okay for him because he's buried, but she's not. So how could you say that? So what do they say? Be'omeret bari li. It's when she says, I'm clear on it, okay? Because I know, right, this is, you can imagine a situation. Come witnesses, right, that say, remember we learned this whole thing about if the witnesses say, if one witness comes and says your husband's dead, she's going to check into it. She's not going to just rely on them. She's going to make sure. So she's turned over every stone and she comes to a certain, peace of mind, and she says, I know for sure my husband's dead. And then a woman like that can't stay with this suffix, right? She could, and she could drive herself crazy, right? But you, at a certain point, she meets, you know, this guy is totally sure that her husband died, and she basically is convinced by it.
And she's talked to enough people.
She's looked into enough, and she says, okay, I know inside my husband's dead. And therefore, she's allowed to. Okay. That was Rosh Sheshet's explanation. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnayim Omrim Met, Ushnayim Omrim Lo Met, Harezo Lo Tinase. Okay, so if two say she's dead, two say he's not dead. She can't get remarried. V'im Nisei, but if she gets remarried, Lo Tetse. But Shnayim Omrim Nitgarsha, Ushnayim Omrim Lo Nitgarsha, Harezo Lo Tinase, V'im Nisei Tetse. Now here he distinguishes between death and divorce. When it comes to death, if she gets remarried thinking he was dead, she doesn't have to leave her husband. Now remember, this is all not when there's Eid Echad, right? At least for right now, we're going to say it's not Eid Echad, right? Eid Echad, what did we learn? Eid Echad, if he comes back later, do you remember this whole sugya in Yavama? If he comes back later, then she has to get divorced. But if it was two Eidim, then she doesn't have to get divorced from her new husband. So now, we're going to see. So here, they're going to say, if they said he was dead, then she doesn't have to get divorced. But if they said it was divorced, then if she got remarried based on thinking she was divorced, she has to get, if she got remarried, she has to get divorced from the new husband. So obviously the Gemara is going to say,
she gets divorced from the new husband and she goes back to the first husband?
Right, so then she really can't go back to the first husband either.
Right. It's a big problem.
It's a big problem. So Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa, what's the difference? Why in the marriage case can she stay married? I'm sorry, in the death case, can she stay married? But in the divorce case, she can't stay married to the second guy. So now we're going to have three different answers. Amar Abaye, Tirgama be'ed echad. Even though he said it was Shnayim, we're going to say it was really Eid Echad. Okay, so now why? Eid Echad omer meit. What happens in a meit case? Himnuhu rabbanan kebeit shrei. If we take one witness, what do we say? One, in a death case, because we don't want this poor woman to be an aguna, what did we say? One is believed like two. Well, if one is believed like two, then what do we have? If one said he was dead and one said he's not dead, well, if the first guy came first and said he's dead, we believe that guy to be like two, in which case the one guy right? We're going to see even right now. Ukidula da'amar ula kol makom shehemina Torah ed echad harei kan shnayim. Anytime the Torah believes one aid, he's considered like two aiding. V'hai de'ka'amar lo meit, and then when the second guy comes and says he didn't die, right? The single witness who comes and says he's not dead, hava lechad, he's just one witness. V'ein dvarav shalachad b'mkom shnayim. Okay, that's Abai. Now Abai has an obvious problem here, which is, well, if that's the case, then why does it say she can't get remarried in this situation? It's only if she did, we don't make her get divorced. You follow? In other words, she should be allowed to get remarried in this case. So then they say, ah. So then there's a separate thing. So really, halachically, she can get remarried in this case. If one says dead, the other one says not dead, she's allowed to get remarried because the one already turned into two, and then there's a single witness against the double. Doesn't stand any water. But Mishum de Rav Asi, there's a separate issue here. De Amar Rav Asi, Hasir Mimcha Ikshut Peva Lezut Svatayim Harchek Mimenka. Okay, which means keep away from things that don't smell good. You know, this, there's something, you know, there's not suspicion that your husband's not alive. I'm sorry, not dead. So, you know, while yes, if you're already remarried, we're not going to bother you. But if you haven't gotten remarried and someone thinks your husband's alive, don't go getting remarried, okay? Even if technically, halachically, we don't believe that person, okay? Which is very interesting, right? Because halachically, that guy holds no water. Because the first guy who said dead is believed like two, and there we just have one aid. But yet they say...
The one who says dead believe like two, and the one who says he isn't like they're both.
So that's because, okay, that's because we wanted to allow, there was a whole story also, Maaseh Shaya, we wanted to allow women not to get stuck in situations where their husbands may have died, and we don't know about it, and we have no proof, and if one witness comes and that's all we have to base it on, we're going to allow one witness to prevent this woman from becoming an aguna. It was one of those cases where the rabbis went lekrat the woman and tried to prevent, you know, her being an aguna, and therefore one witness is believed like two. Now, they weren't really referring to a case where there was one against one, right? They were referring to any, but once we believe one to be like two, well, if that witness comes first and says so, well, then he's believed like two, and then, you know, this, anyone who comes after, unless it's two witnesses, is not going to be able to fight against that one. Okay. So now that's one answer. Now we're going to have a different answer. Oh, sorry. We didn't explain the Seifa now. So Seifa, according to him, so what's the case according to Abai? It's, again, it's Eid Echad. Eid Echad Omer Nitgarsha, Ve'Eid Echad Omer Lo Nitgarsha. Now, what's interesting here? What's each one testifying? If they say she got divorced or didn't get divorced, they each admit that what? That she was married. So travayu beish and ish kamisade. So we have two witnesses now that confirm that this woman is married. V'hai dekamer nitgarsha hava lechad ve'ein v'rav shalachad b'mkom shnayim. Right? But now we have two witnesses, right, that say she's married, and now we have one that says she's divorced and one that says she's not divorced. So we only have one that says she's divorced, so we can't accept one against two. It's like he causes his own downfall, right? Yeah. It's almost like scoring a goal in your own, right, in the other team's goal. It's like he's supporting the other side without realizing. Rava Amar, so that's Abai's read. Abai reads Rabbi Yochanan that really he means one and one and not two and two. Rava Amar lo olam treu treininu. It is two against two. V'ra'a Rabbi Yochanan v'rav sh'Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi begerushin v'lo ra'a b'mita. Okay, what does he say? Let's go back now. Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi said she has to get divorced, remember? And then he said it's only in the case where the eidim came before she got remarried. If the eidim come before she gets remarried, she's not allowed to... we have to make her... two witnesses come and say this, two witnesses come and say the opposite. She decides I'm getting remarried anyway. We see that that happened. We have to now make her get divorced. It was inappropriate what she did. And Rabbi Yochanan is coming to say, I agree with him when it comes to gerushin. I don't agree with him when it comes to mita. My taima mita. Mita eina yechola makhashto. Gerushin yechola makhashto. What does that mean? A woman, when it comes to her husband dying, is not going to be able, if he shows up in front of her face, she can't say, oh, you're really dead, right? But in a gerushin case, if he shows up, she can say, yeah, I know you're here, but we got divorced, okay? Therefore, we're going to assume, and this goes with all we said about Eid Echad Ne'eman in a Mavet case, The woman, we're assuming that she's only going to do it if she's sure that he's dead. And she wouldn't dare to do it otherwise, unless she really was confident. Because if he shows up, he's going to basically prove her wrong. Whereas that doesn't exist in the Gerushin case. And therefore, when it comes to the Gerushin case, we basically don't believe her so much. Her credibility is lessened. And therefore, if two witnesses come and say this, and two witnesses come and say that, and she says, I'm going to get married anyway, we don't think she's really confident in what she's doing. We think she just has no, she'll be gutsy, and she'll just say to his face, you divorced me. Okay, now we're going to question that in a second. But when it comes to Mita, we're not concerned she's going to do that, because how could she possibly say to someone's face, you're dead? Now the Gemara says, Umichatzife kulei hai? Can you assume that the woman's going to be so chatzufa to lie in his face and say, you're divorced? And why do we think that? That she won't be so chatzuf? Because we have a concept about this. We learned this, actually, I think. V'ha amar Rav Hamnuna, ha'isha sha'amra le'ba'ala gerashtani ne'emenet. Chazaka, do you remember this? Ein isha miza paneh bifnei ba'ala. We have a chazaka that a woman, if she says to her husband, this is at the very end of Yevamah, you divorced me, we must believe her because she wouldn't be so chatzuf as to go in front of his face. We had this just the other day about bifnei ba'al chovo. If someone lent you money, you're not going to say, you didn't lend me money, like stare him in the face and say, you didn't lend me money, like lie straight to his face. No one's going to go in front of her husband and say, you divorced me when you didn't divorce me.
It was also the concept that any woman would rather be in a state of marriage.
Right, that was also the concept, right. She'd rather be married. Hani mile, but now they say, so how could you say she be so chatzufa and therefore she's not so believed in the Gerushin case because we think she'll lie? Hani mile, hecha deleka edim de kamasaya le. Aval hecha deika edim de kamasaya le, mizau mizah. A woman's not going to go in front of his face and say, you divorced me out of the blue. Like if it's not, if she's got no claim. But here, what do you have? You have two witnesses who also said he divorced her. So if she's got witnesses to back her up, she'll have no problem saying that to him. Okay, here they're not concerned that the woman wants to stay married. Okay, there's no concept of that. Basically, we're saying, miza, miza, like adraba. She's going to go armed with her witnesses and say, you divorced me, and here are my witnesses to prove it. Now, while it's true there's two witnesses saying otherwise, at least she's got two witnesses who are willing to support her claim.
Probably the man's contesting it.
Right. Obviously, he's contesting. Otherwise, there's no question here. Okay, that's the second interpretation. The third interpretation of understanding Rabbi Yochanan is Rabbi Asi. Again, we're trying to figure out the difference between the Gerushin case and the Mavet case. Rabbi Asi amar, kigon de amre edim, achshav met, achshav girsha. It's a case where they say the guy just died, or the guy just divorced her. Now, what's the issue? Remember what we said. With a Gerushin, what's the case? She doesn't have the get. She lost the get. If he just divorced her, now I don't know about you, I could lose something, right, like 2 minutes after it happened, but assuming maybe I wouldn't lose a get 2 minutes after the divorce happened,
you
right? The assumption is, right, maybe they didn't have as many papers and stuff. Anyway, that's going to be the assumption here. So, Mita Leika Liberura. There's no way to verify a death, right? Obviously, we're talking about where there's no body, okay? If there's no body, so there's no way to confirm this. But Gerushin Ika Liberura. They say to her, Imita dahachihava echzelangitech, right? If this really happened, well then show me the get. And if you can't show me the get, then obviously we don't believe you. And that's why, again, in the Gerushin case, she's not believed. And so we now have three, I would say, ukimtas, right? Three ways to say what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about. One is to say it was Eid Echad, and then we're going to distinction between Mavet and Gerushin because in Mavet, only in the death case is Eid Echad Eman Kishnaim, and therefore we're not going to believe the second one. Or we have two Eidim, right, which is Rav, right, it was Rav who said it? Rav said it was two witnesses, and then we're going to say that he's holding like Rabbi Menachem or Rabbi Yossi and Gerushin and not in Mita, and that's because a woman... We're worried that she's going to lie about Gerushin or not, right? She's willing to go out on the line for Gerushin and not for Mavet. And therefore, we're going to believe her only in the Mavet case. And if she gets remarried, we're going to let her stay. Because she really must be doing what she thinks is true, as opposed to the Gerushin case where we don't necessarily believe her. And again, because she has two witnesses to support her, she can go and say to her husband and possibly lie in his face and say, you divorced me. Or the third option, which is going to be that it happened, just happened, okay? And if it just happened, then she has to show a get. If she can't show a get, well, then we don't believe her. Whereas in a death case, there's not necessarily a body to show for it, and there's no way to know, and therefore if she got remarried, we're going to let her stay remarried because, again, we don't have any way to prove yes or no. Whereas the get, the absence of a get, leans, makes us way more heavily to the side of the two eidim that say that she's not divorced. Okay.
What's the word you used to say there are three options?
Ukimta. In ukimta is when we say, usually you use it for a mishnah, although you can really use it for anything. It comes from the word lahakim, lekayem. We're establishing the words of Rabbi Yochanan in a particular case. Okay, so it most often happens with Mishnayot, where the Mishnah doesn't make sense to them, and they say, we started with it today. There was that Braita, and the Braita said she's believed, and they say, how could she be believed? Why would we ever believe her in this case? So they say, oh no, it's only in a case where she gave an excuse. So we basically did an ukimta. What did we say? That source that seems to say it's any case, we're only applying it in a particular situation. So same here. It's only if it was Eid Echad, according to Abai. It's when there's two Eidim, according to Rabin. Rabin's lesson of an Ukimti is really just saying, it is two Eidim, and he's explaining it. And the last opinion, the last opinion, Ravasi, says it's an Ukimta, because it's only if it just happened. Meaning that this whole statement of Rabbi Yochanan, in most cases, is not relevant. Right? That's an Ukimta. It's taking his blanket statement, which seems to apply across the board, and it's saying, oh no, it's only, because it doesn't make sense what he's saying, so why else would there be an excuse between Gerushin and Mavet? It must be because, again, there's something to show for it, but if time passed, it might not necessarily be something to show for it, so it must be they happen immediately. Okay, in which case, we're somewhat neutralizing Rabbi Yochanan's statement. And this happens all the time in the Gemara. It's a very common, when something doesn't make sense to them, because, you know, if something doesn't make sense to us nowadays, you read something and it doesn't make sense, you say, okay, it doesn't make sense to me, and you ignore it, right? They didn't like that. That wasn't their approach. If Rabbi Yochanan said something, Rabbi Yochanan was a gadol, like, he must know what he's talking about. So he must be saying something, but yet logic states that what could he possibly be saying? And for, you know, again, if we were learning this b'iyun, we try to say, what are all the advantages and disadvantages of the other two shitot? And why does he have to narrow it to such, why does he have to limit it to such a narrow case? You can start to decide, well, what's wrong with this and what's wrong with this? And what are the weaknesses and strengths of each argument? But in the end, he has no choice as far as he can see it, but to say that it's only in this situation. Okay? And that happens all the time in the Gemara.